Case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the next case, Buey versus Quad Graphics. Ms. Lewison?
May it please the court. My name is Brenda Lewison and I represent Anthony Buey, the appellant in this matter, against his former employer, Quad Graphics. The connection between Mr. Buey's disclosure that he was HIV positive on October 15, 1999, and his subsequent October 17 discipline is clear. Mr. Buey was suspended because he had AIDS. Because the suspension was accompanied by a last chance agreement, the connection between Mr. Buey's disclosure and the imposition of the last chance agreement is also clear. Mr. Buey was provided a last chance agreement because he has AIDS. And finally, because there is less than 2 weeks between the date of the last chance agreement and Mr. Buey's discharge, the connection between the two is clear. Mr. Buey was discharged because he has AIDS.
But it isn't so clear, of course, because he had already received 3 warnings for habitual absenteeism before his disclosure that he had AIDS. And after his disclosure that he had AIDS, there was a review of his 36 absences in which the company deleted everything that it thought could have had to do with his medical condition, found that he still had 14 unexcused absences, and on that basis chose to characterize the time off that he had in October as disciplinary rather than anything else it might have been, and also gave him the last chance agreement. In other words, it really seems to have bent over backwards to make sure that it wasn't taking the HIV status into account. Surely, on the verge of firing, somebody can't suddenly say, oh, by the way, even though I've never told you this before, I have AIDS, therefore I now have life tenure. That can't be the rule.
I understand. And had he been provided with a final warning or a last chance agreement prior to his HIV positive, the fact that he had HIV to the company, this case would be different. But that's not what happened.
Why is it different if once he tells them that you're basically saying they're now disabled from imposing a last chance agreement because despite whatever problems there have been with his record, I'll say generally in the past, now he's told them he has HIV, and even if they do everything they can to make sure they're not relying on that, in other words, looking at all those old absences and everything, he still gets, you know, an extra layer of chances.
Well, as in any employment case, the central question is whether the employer would have taken the same action had everything else remained the same. On September 9, 1999, he was disciplined for absenteeism. We don't dispute that. On October 15, he called his employer and said, I'm sick.
And the September 9 discipline was the third one. He had March 19, 1998. He had November 4, 1998. Then he gets September 9, 1999.
Where if the discipline said he may be terminated.
Right.
Other employees with similar absentee records were not terminated. He was not terminated with an absentee record like that. And
although he has reached the warning stage.
Oh, absolutely. And so had several other employees that we noted in our brief and in the record.
We only have two. I don't think anybody else had 3 of these disciplines.
With all due respect, I believe that they were over shorter periods of time. Mr. Buey had worked for the company, I believe, 3 years by the time that he finally was discharged. and some of the other employees had not worked there as long. Some of the other employees had worked there a considerable period of time. I don't dispute that either. But
let's be focused. Let's focus on the last chance agreement, which seems to be the thing that's inspired by the absenteeism, because as I understand the record, the actual termination comes about because of the violent interaction, violent interactions, plural, the one at the end of November and then the one on December the 1st. That's not about absenteeism. That's about violence. It does also violate the last chance agreement, but I'm just trying to be precise here about what's going on.
Okay. The period between mid-October and mid-November when Mr. Bowie disclosed and the date when he actually returned to work, that month, and some dates in between there, was originally approved leave. It was subsequently changed to a suspension, a disciplinary suspension. The company claims that the reason it was changed to a disciplinary suspension was because they did this review over the course of the 12 months prior, not the year and a half for the 36 absences, but the 12 months prior, and made a determination that he had 14 unexcused absences.
Was he paid during that?
Pardon?
This may not even be relevant, but does the record show whether he was paid during the period of this suspension or not, or did he have to pay back if it turned into a disciplinary?
He was never paid.
So it was an unpaid period of time off, even at its best characterization.
Correct. He was under the understanding on October 15 that it would be paid, but in fact it was not. The 14 dates that they identified are belied by their own documents. The discipline on September 9, 1999 indicates several dates, it's a week in August of 1999, where he was actually ill and ought to have been on some sort of approved FMLA leave according to their justification provided in after he was discharged.
But some of these dates, if I'm not remembering incorrectly, I thought the company argued that you, back at the summary judgment proceedings, didn't go through these dates in the detail that you're now giving to us. Now,
I may not have been as articulate as I could have been, but all of the dates which I identified in my brief to the Court of Appeals are supported by documents which are in the appendix, and all of the documents that are in the appendix are associated with proposed findings of fact, plaintiff's objections to proposed findings of fact, plaintiff's proposed findings of fact, documents like that.
Did you, in fact, connect the dots for Judge Randa? Did you explain in the way that you're now explaining to us why the company shouldn't be saying there were 14?
I know I did as to some of those dates. I'd have to go back and review my brief, frankly, in order to answer you more specifically.
Okay.
Clearly, however, the information was before the judge in the form of the proposed findings of fact, as is required in this circuit. And my recollection is we made those arguments. As to the 14 dates, then, we would assert that their claim, which, by the way, they only made after my client was discharged, that is to say, their claim that he had 14 dates in the year prior where there were unexcused absences, are belied by their own documents. And it is worth noting that they did not provide my client with those 14 dates so that he could review those at the time that he was provided with the last chance agreement. The only dates which my client was provided, were on the performance improvement plan associated with the last chance agreement. Those are September 24, October 2, October 10, and October 17. Now, September 24, my client was ill. He may not have called in. October 2, we don't dispute that he did not call in. October 10, there is absolutely no way that he could have been recorded absent for that date because he never, ever worked that shift. How it showed up in his records as an absence, we don't know. As for October 17, there's a material dispute of fact in that my client believes, was told, that he was not supposed to appear at work again after October 15 until they cleared this matter up. And that's exactly what he did. He didn't appear at work again until he was to meet with management and talk about the fact that he was HIV positive and what it was that they were going to do about his absentee record as a result of his disclosure that he was HIV positive. They need not have gone back to review a year's worth of attendance records. They instead backfilled his record with attendance violations for which he had already been disciplined. If they really wanted to look at only those dates where it was of immediate concern, they should have looked at those dates between the date of his last discipline, September 9, and October 15.
But I'm not familiar with any rule that says that employers can't, even if they've already taken some disciplinary measures for something like an absenteeism problem, can't also keep the bigger picture in mind and see if that's working, if you will. Maybe as time goes on, there's nothing discriminatory, let's put it that way, nothing that one would trace to a protected characteristic that says employers can't do that.
I would argue with you that Desert Palace goes to the contrary. In Desert Palace, the evidence of backfilling an employee's record
was... Well, wouldn't you call it backfilling, of course, but if, in fact, there are absences and there have been disciplines for those absences, thus they are documents of record, an employer isn't to stop from saying, you know, we've disciplined you, I'll make up a number, you know, six times, and now here's the seventh time. Apparently what we've done so far isn't getting the message through, and they can do something else.
But if that were the case, it would make sense then that the individual would be told what he or she was being disciplined for, and that's not what happened here. He was not provided this list of 14 dates. The only dates that he was provided were from, as I say, that September 24 date through October 17. And he was not instructed that this was as a result of his earlier discipline. The document says that this was as a result of his earlier disciplines, but he was not told that these 14 dates were at issue. And if he had been, he would have had the opportunity to correct that record and perhaps negotiate something different with the employer. With that, if I may save my time for rebuttal, please.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Mr. Scribner.
Good morning. My name is Tom Scribner. I'm representing Quad Graphics in this case. Over 4 years ago, Mr. Bowie was discharged in December of 1999. At the time, he was a two-year employee. He was discharged for violating a last chance agreement that he signed in the middle of November in 1999. The discharge is really the only actionable employment claim that's involved in this case. Your questions previously focused on the last chance agreement and the suspension. Neither was pleaded in the complaint. I believe what Mr. Bowie is arguing is that evidence somehow bears on the discharge, but those two events themselves are not the actionable claims. Cases changed over time. Before the district court, this was primarily a reverse sex discrimination case and primarily a race case. Much of the evidence in terms of disparate treatment in particular that was brought to the district court was in the context of those two issues. Those issues are not being pursued on this appeal. What remains is a discharge claim under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
But if the causal chain, I'm not sure that it's so clear that the last chance agreement isn't a separate adverse employment action, but it seems pretty clear that the reason he was discharged is because he violated a term of the last chance agreement in the company's view because it incorporated the whole manual and so forth. So it does seem to me that one way or the other, if it hadn't been subject to the last chance agreement, if that was HIV related, then it's not any further than one would normally expect to go to say that it's all here.
The flow of events, Your Honor, of course. involves the...
But for the
attendance, the accumulated attendance discipline.
Right, the accumulated attendance. Your opponent's argument is that but for the HIV positive announcement, the last chance agreement would never have happened, and thus the violation on the first.
Let me just add, in terms of what the company had to deal with from when Mr. Bowie came forward in the middle of October for the first time to disclose that he was HIV positive, there had been the three attendance disciplines that you've noted, but there also were intervening absences after the last discipline had been taken. They were accumulating. The company was in the process of dealing with them, and that is when Mr. Bowie came forward and announced that he was HIV positive, perhaps, apparently, possibly, probably, because he knew he would be terminated otherwise. So what the company then had to do was take into account the new information received from Mr. Bowie, which it agreed to do, had to deal with the attendance issue that had not been dealt with. And so what the company did to Mr. Bowie was to say, we will place you on a leave while we can figure out what is going on. When this issue was presented to Mr. Bowie, he was told that he should submit medical information. The company would look at that medical information, and if the medical information bore out what he said, then any absences that he had that would be related to the medical condition would be removed from his record. That's exactly what happened between the middle of October and the middle of November. That is the antithesis of discrimination on the basis or because of his disabling condition, if he had one. The two events at the end clearly are the events of the discharge. As I understand the argument, there's a timing question. And as I understand the further argument, there is something of a disparate treatment issue in this case. On the question of timing, the court has been clear that it is a protected act and a prohibited event with time, but no intervening circumstances or events, no mitigating or aggravating circumstances. All, in my view, of what happened between the middle of October, the middle of November, was to add intervening events having nothing to do with the HIV positive medical situation and having everything to do with what the company needed to try to manage. Clearly, the insubordinate conflict with the coworker at the end of November was a violation of the last chance, had nothing to do with the medical condition. 2 days later, another violation, similar, could have been terminated at the end of November. If the company was anxious to terminate him for the prohibited reason, he's gone after what he said.
Your opponent, however, paints what I have to say is an unflattering picture of this company as a company that widely tolerates employee violence on the floor of the plant, and only the HIV positive man gets terminated for that violence. And if that were the case, of course, we don't usually see it in such an extreme guise, but let's take a more just hypothetically, you know, if it were absence, if everybody else in the plant were able to be absent 2 days a month and nobody cared about it, and only the HIV positive person was fired, then you would see, okay, even though you have an absentee policy, that isn't the real policy, and in fact, there's discrimination happening. As I understand her argument, it's that kind of argument only with respect to violence.
Your Honor, it's a large company. These are huge plants. There are many departments, thousands of workers. I do not agree for a moment that the characterization of the evidence in this case would establish that this is a workplace infested with violence for which there are no disciplinary consequences. There are a couple of disparate treatment situations that have been plucked out of the many workers over many years. They are isolated, not systematic. They do not necessarily prove that there has been a countenance of violence either. There are situations, there are two in particular, that involve confrontations, possibly three. Each of those, in one way or another, was dealt with. The issue isn't was it ignored. The issue isn't was it blown off. The issue may be were the circumstances completely comparable. The issue may be was the discipline that was taken relatively correct or incorrect. These were not situations where nothing happened.
I take it Mr. Iwanski eventually was fired?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at the record, the timing on a couple of these things, a couple of the confrontations occurred after Mr. Bowie was discharged. One of the events that would be the major issue, either with Mr. Iwanski or Mr. Studinski, within 2 months, he was discharged. There is a considerable question of exactly at any given moment were the records of the people comparable. Much of the evidence on disparate treatment did go to the issue of race and sex. I do not believe that the record evidence here fully is developed either on the family medical leave issue or the ADA issue as a disparate treatment matter. And so the record, I believe, is silent in terms of whether any of these other alleged comparators were in a disabled category or not, in an FMLA protected category or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Scrivener. Ms. Lewison.
I'd like to address some of the comments made by opposing counsel. First, the assessment by opposing counsel that the company was in the process of dealing with Mr. Bowie's attendance issues on October 15 implies that they had already anticipated that they were going to discipline him perhaps as of October 14. There is nothing in the record that would indicate that. On October 15, Mr. Bowie called in sick, and Mr. Connell said, geez, this is going to cause some problems with your attendance, or words to that effect, and Mr. Bowie said, I have to tell you I'm HIV positive, or I have AIDS. I can't remember which one he actually said. Furthermore, his statement that any absences related to illness would have been removed from any record of discipline in his file, as I said, that statement is absolutely disputed. It's a material fact in dispute, and the evidence which disputes that statement is the company's own records. In other words, on September 9, 1999, Mr. Bowie was provided with a disciplinary notice that said that from August, I believe it was the 22nd through the 26th, he had excused absences because he had a doctor's excuse. And yet, those are three of the absences that show up on that list of 14. The other thing that I wanted to note is that it has been argued that at the end of November, Mr. Bowie was insubordinate. There is nothing in the record to suggest that he was insubordinate. The disciplinary notice which he was provided for that incident suggests that job performance is a problem. It says nothing about insubordination. The question there is obviously a material issue of fact. The books were coming off the line, and the question is, you know, when things came off too fast, the workers routinely scooped them out of the way. And the question is whether or not he scooped them a little bit too hard and threw them on the floor or simply got them out of the way as the books are coming down the line. It was the incident which prompted his discussions with Ms. Britt Grignon the next day because she claimed that he was throwing them on the floor, and he claims he was not. Nevertheless, the fact of the matter is that there was a significant amount of attendance violations that were tolerated by this company. On average, it appears that they would allow someone to be absent as much as once a month, and they might or might not be disciplined for that. For example, Mr. Iwanski, there was some concern noted earlier that perhaps my client had been disciplined more than others, but in fact Mr. Iwanski had been absent 7 times in 5 months and was not disciplined, even though otherwise he might have been. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Lewison. Thanks to both counsel.